Hi, dear folks. Here we are, the new movie break interview. And I'm Alida Bach. I'm here with John McGarrow. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah. Running, but
busy time right now, yeah.
Exactly. So how is it for you to be at Berlinale?
It's good. This is my second time here now. I was here a couple years ago with Past Lives, and it's always good. It's a lovely festival. Obviously very special for this film in particular because this takes place here in Germany, and we had our premiere at the venue where Vera Brandeis really discovered Keith Jarrett, so it's just a lot of magic around it.
And you just had the other movie, Omar, from Sundance, so you're going from Sundance to Berlinale.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that feel?
I don't know where I'm at anymore, but I'm trying to keep my wits about me and you know, keep going until I can rest.
Do you already have a preference?
They're very different festivals. It's hard to compare them. But I do think of the city, because, you know, Sundance is a little town. It's isolated. Berlin is a city. But of the city festivals, this is definitely one of my favorites. Yeah.
So let's go right into the movie, Köln 75. You play Keith Jarrett. Did you know his music, or was he more like a name to you, or were you familiar with it?
No, I was not familiar with him at all. Unfortunately, in the States, really the jazz world kind of gets cut off for so many people around the mid to late 60s. So I was familiar with a lot of those, you know, traditional jazz musicians who came before him. And then with Miles Davis, once he starts to depart into the more like eccentric, abstract kind of jazz he's doing, where Keith gets involved, that's about where people start to become a little like vague on jazz in America, unless you're really like a deep, you know, jazz file. So this was an introduction to Keith for me, which is always fun as an actor to get to be introduced and learn and educated on an entirely new thing. So it was a lot of reading, a lot of listening, a lot of watching, and really bringing myself up to speed with who this guy is and what his impact was on the entire music industry. I was really fun to do that.
And since he's still alive and he's still around, was there any chance to talk to him or maybe get in some kind of contact, maybe ride him or contact
him? No, he really didn't want anything to do with it, which I understand because, you know, I don't think he just wants to be remembered for this. And I think he feels like, I mean, these were improvisational concerts. He did it once and then he let it go. So I think part of that, you know, mission is that you have to leave it behind. So I don't think he has any interest in revisiting this time or this concert. That's just, I think, who he is as an artist. He's also older now. His health is declining.
Yeah, he had the stroke and now he can't
play
anymore.
Two strokes, yeah. So he just wasn't going to be a part of this, which was fine because I think we were discovering our own kind of mythology of Keith, because that storyline, which is kind of, you know, it's a sub-storyline. This is really Vera Brandeis' story about this amazing woman who put together this concert at 18 years old. And our world of Keith is almost like a fever dream. It's this kind of, is it real? Is it fake? What is happening? What really happened in that car? We don't even know. There's books about it. And I spoke to people who, you know, Vera, obviously, Keith's brother, but we're not doing an exact history of that moment in Keith's life. We're sort of painting an impression of it. But still, I wanted to have that base, that knowledge. Who was this guy? Why was he out there? What was he doing? And trying to understand that as deeply as possible was important, even without the access to Keith.
And do you play the piano, or did you learn to play?
I had to restart. I had played before when I was younger, and then life obviously takes its, and then you sort of forget about those things. So, but we had a great teacher who I worked with for a while named Scott Gentile, who we just collaborated and broke down those songs and drilled those songs. And on top of that, also really analyzed Keith's mannerisms in the way he played and his movements and why he did what he did, because it's an extremely unique way of playing an instrument. But we did have some time. We had a few months to really dig into that. And it's fun. I mean, that's one of the greatest things about acting, is that you have these crazy opportunities to discover things and learn things that you never would have thought of before.
And you have a couple, just very few, but very key scenes with Mala Emde. How was the relationship on set with her, working together?
I was probably a little cold to her, because I think there was a, not that I do it consciously, but I think I wanted to have sort of a distance between the kids' world and Keith's world to maintain that sort of tension between us. And luckily, the last thing we shot together was the scene in the hotel room, where it all kind of comes ahead, and they obviously come to an understanding and a mutual respect for each other. So that was our chance to kind of let that wall down a little bit. And then after the final days of shooting, we were able to have a drink together and hang out. And she's such a lovely, fantastic actor and person. But it was probably a little cold to her on set. I was probably a little bit distant.
Would you describe yourself as a method actor?
I wouldn't. I think that word is ridiculously thrown around, and I think it's lost all meaning. And I don't think anyone ever really knew what it ever meant to begin with. I'm an actor who does what I need to do to get there, and it's different for every single project and every single job. It's definitely not living as the person or having to be called by that name or any of that kind of stuff. But you can't help but let a little bit of that energy seep into who you are when you're living so close to it for months at a time.
What I noticed, your body of work, like, is so versatile already at that stage. So different characters. Like, what does a role need to attract you?
Really, the core is the writing. Just dialogue and scenes and characters that really jump off the page and engage me. That's the key. Then there's conversations after that. But the real root of saying yes is the script. That's what 95% of the time is what makes my decision for me.
I don't know if you have heard it, but at least in Sundance, there was a lot of people saying that you would be nominated for an Oscar for the role in Oh Man. How do you think it will happen? Do you think it's a joke?
The movie, I've heard that. I've heard this before. It's not the first time I've heard that song and dance. I'm not going to hold my breath on that. The movie, it needs to sell. It hasn't even sold to a distributor yet. It's really difficult out there for indie films. And I see so many of my peers and colleagues who deliver such tremendous performances that are never really seen. So more important than winning any award is just to get the movie seen. And I'm really so proud of Omaha. It's such a beautiful, just heart-wrenching film. Based on true events. And if anyone's listening to this who wants to buy a movie, please buy it. That's what matters. Just the people seeing it. You can't do this for awards. Then you'll drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, it touched me. Like, I cried, and I don't cry often in the movie theater. You know, critics, we don't cry. We are hardened to the core.
Yeah.
Everybody was amazed by this movie at some point, at least from what I know from my colleagues.
I mean, I will say, you know, it's really depressing. And I've heard some people be like, I felt manipulated by it. But really, I know where Cole's heart is as a filmmaker. He would never do that to. That's not his intention. He's not trying to manipulate anyone. It's just sometimes life is really fucking depressing. And sometimes people have real fucking tragedies. And this is what people did go through at that time in America in 2008. And, you know, it could have painted a rosier picture. This wasn't a rosy picture. And I, again, I stand behind that film. I'm so proud of it. And Yeah, it will fuck you up.
Yeah, totally. But I totally agree. Like, it's the opposite. Like, sometimes life is cruel, and seeing that reality, that's just what we have to deal with. Yeah. And always presenting people like, oh, there's a good solution, there's a happy ending, everything will be well. That's manipulated.
Yeah. I agree. I totally agree.
And also, what I want to ask, like, have you ever been in Köln? Because we shot there. So you shot
at most
places.
We shot mostly in Köln. We had to go to Poland for the Opera House because the Köln Opera House, I forget if it was being renovated or something. We couldn't get access to it. So we had to go to Poland and shoot the interiors in there. But for the most part, we shot in Köln. We shot a little bit in Bavaria, the countryside, when you see us on the road. And then a couple of days in Poland, and that was it. So there's also something, you know, I just did September 5, which we shot in Munich, which takes place in Munich. There's something really special when you get to shoot something in the area where it happened. And that really, like, seeps into you, too, and makes it for an even better experience.
And final question before we get thrown out. What's your next project? That's always the default questions, you know, get
in. Yeah. I mean, you know, Omaha, I hope someone buys that and people get to see it. I also, The Bride is coming out, which is Maggie Gyllenhaal's movie. That's insane. It's going to be wild. Totally unique, unlike anything people have seen before. And then I go back to my series, The Agency, which is, you know, we just had our first season. And I'm excited to go back and join those guys. And it's a great group of actors. I'm looking forward to getting back to work on that.
Okay, so I'm looking forward to seeing more of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good talking to you.